All right. Let's get this out of the way first. The thoughts, views, and opinions expressed on Tailboard Talks Firefighter Podcast are solely those of the speakers, guests, and host, and do not in any way represent the thoughts or views or opinions of any other employer, partnership, or sponsor. The material and information in this podcast is for general information purposes only and should be used at the listener's discretion. Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Fourth Shift Tailboard Talks Firefighter Podcast. My name's Chris, and coming to you live this week from the beach. We actually just packed up the camper. Kids are in bed. They got about 4 more hours of sleep till we get out of here nice and early to get to Mammoth Cave on the way home. And then after that, we're back to our regular routine. So next week will be a new episode. This week, I'm replaying my interview with Stephanie White for a few reasons. First of all, it was a great episode, one of my favorite conversations I've had, but also Stephanie just helped me get published on FirefighterNation.com. She gave me that opportunity, hooked me up, and so I got my article published. It's called Any Day is a Good Day to Make a New Year's Resolution. If you go to FirefighterNation.com, click on the Leadership tab, you'll see it under there. Now, Stephanie White, she's a full-time firefighter, 20 years on the East Coast. She also works with a company called the Beltane Guild. She assists departments in creating and instituting pregnancy and postpartum policies and programs. She also presents alongside the IAFF. She runs her 5 After Midnight podcast under the Fire Engineering banner. She pretty much does it all. She's an amazing resource. We had a great chat. I hope you really enjoy it. So like I said, next week, new episode. This week, please enjoy this conversation with Stephanie White. We'll talk to you guys soon. Keep on being a four shifter. It's all good.
I forgot you were in the other part of the country. We East Coasters we think there's California and then the East Coast.
I literally just had this talk with Taylor during our interview 2 days ago or whatever. I empathize with the people who are like, they're like, hey, we have someone from France to draw the U.S. And it's like Texas, cornfield, Seattle, and then New York. And it's like I'm really bad at geography.
Fair enough.
Why don't you do a quick intro? Tell me who you are. Tell everybody what you're doing, because you play a very specific, crucial role that I'm bet not a lot of people know exists. Like, your role is not a heavily publicized thing. And I think had Megan,
which one?
Not firefighter. But I didn't know about it. When I said, somebody said, you should talk to Stephanie. And I said, what do you do? And you told me, I was like, I didn't know that was a position, a policy generating kind of thing. So tell me all about it. I'll start there. You got it. Go ahead.
So my name is Stephanie White. I work in an East Coast department. I've been a professional firefighter for the past 18 years. And I think what you're referring to is I work with an organization called Beltane Guild. And what I do with them is I help fire departments across the country write reproductive health policies, which is a fancy way of saying taking care of pregnant women and couples looking to start families and all the challenges that we as firefighters face, from the fertility part of it all the way to recovering from having the baby. I help facilitate. Yeah. Okay.
That's exactly it, because I didn't know there was that resource out there. I didn't know it was a thing. I mean, I wouldn't have had a reason necessarily to know it before talking to Megan. So who have you, when someone calls you or calls the company, what typically happens after that?
So people will normally reach out to me, because I also have taught this subject with the IFF. So normally through either Beltane Guild or just their local union, they'll find my name and they'll say, hey, we are looking to write a policy. How did you get it going in your county? I work for a county of about 1,700 people in Virginia. And to back up a little bit, it's always a surprise to me to see how many departments don't have any kind of pregnancy policy, reproductive health policy. So normally they'll say, how did you get your program started? So our program started before me, but I got pregnant with my first child in 2011. And no offense to those who wrote it before me, they were working within their rights for the time, back in the 90s, I think, when they first wrote it. But it didn't address, you know, staying physically strong and coming back from the pregnancy and all those things. It was just kind of a, you're entitled to sit behind a desk and make sure you fill out these forms. It just ensured you weren't going to get fired for getting, for becoming pregnant. So that's normally step one, is they'll say, hey, how did you get your policy in place? Because I went back in 2019 and we were lucky enough that we were able to completely revamp it. It still needs more work, but it's now it addresses more of, hey, you have the right to sit behind a desk or not, stay active, and here's how to have a healthy pregnancy and to come back healthy from that pregnancy. So we've gotten step better, still more steps to take. So then I see what their department has, and we build from there. We see what we can get away with per se in terms of, all right, can we write it in that you guys are allowed to be more active or have spots for the mom who is fatigued and needs to sit behind a desk, is having a hard pregnancy, whatever. We see what kind of boundaries we can push to write more language in there to make sure that moms can have a unique experience while they're on modified duty to make sure that they stay healthy or get whatever rest they need.
So how do you, if someone calls you and they're, let's say a female calls you from the department and says, I want to bring you in and talk to my chief and my administrative staff. Have you been met with, what are the various things you've been met with? Like, are most people like ready and waiting for it? Or like, what is she doing here? We're not going to talk to her. Because you're coming in from the outside and you're going to tell these old white guys most likely how to change their entire universe, right? Or at least start thinking about something they haven't really had to think about in their tenure there. How do you create that gap or that bridge?
So I've been really lucky that most places, when they have reached out officially through their union, this is a step that they want to take themselves. Luckily, if I've gotten the call that way, sometimes I have had females reach out and say, this isn't, I don't have official authorization to do this. This is a project I took upon myself to do. And that is when we're met with more struggle, when it's a grassroots, non-approved movement of a female saying, hey, I want to start a family, but there's nothing on the books, and I'm terrified to start one without having some sort of official policy in place to protect my job. That's when I get the kickback. And mostly that female, unfortunately, carries the brunt of it and gets the kickback because she's doing it on her own in her department, and I haven't kind of officially been brought in to help.
Okay. So you put up something from the Five After Midnight podcast, two parts of it, which I thought was pretty cool. And it happened right after the Megan Frillman episode. First part said something to the effect of like, you don't have to be forced onto light duty. You can stay active as long as you see appropriate. I think it generated quite a bit of buzz from all the comments and all the feedback. And the next day you put up, yeah, but why would you? Like, why would you want to stay that active that deep in a pregnancy? And you kind of played both sides very, very well. I would like it, I appreciate it if you could run through that whole thing, the yes, you can, but why would you? Or I should say the yes, you can part, because that's one thing that I wasn't really aware of is like, I always figured if someone was pregnant at a certain point, they would absolutely want to be on light duty or restricted duty or whatever you call it, or just not on the front line, right? But there's way more people that I talk to now that are like, no, I had to stay active. I couldn't adjust my schedule because of daycare and my existing kid, or I didn't want to be considered different. I didn't want to be singled out, or there's no rules in place, so I don't want to risk it. So there's far more people than I thought that would want to stay active deeper into their pregnancy as a firefighter than I expected. But then there's the other side that you brought up in the second post, which is like, if there's a way not to, maybe do that. So run me through that whole universe. This could take up the rest of the episode, I have a feeling. So go for it. Wherever you feel like picking that one up, go for it.
So I'm going to give you a personal example for that and then explain my thinking behind those two posts. With my first son, I stayed on the line on the engine until I was 6 months pregnant. And it was either the day, I think it was the day before I was scheduled to come off the line, we had a fire. And I ended up by myself on the top floor, think it was two or three rooms off, and it was just a lot of work. And I was alone for a hot second until the truck showed up and gave me a hand. And we ended up, because they were investigating it for being a drug lab, we ended up being on the scene, I think, for like 6 or 7 hours into the night, freezing cold. And I remember being terrified because I could not feel my son kicking. Like he was not moving, nothing. And I pulled a stethoscope out of the aid bag, and I remember checking for a heartbeat, and I just was terrified. And I wanted to stay on the line for so long, A, because nobody was doing that. And I'm a stubborn a-hole like all of us firefighters are. We want to prove something. We want to say we can physically do something others can't. But also because I thought, well, being active is going to be great for this baby. And that's just where my head was at in the mid-2000s. Fast forward to my second son, who I had two miscarriages in between my two boys, and I came out with him at 3 months. And none of that, and that was 2014. So none of the science that Sarah Jahnke has been putting out there, and none of the research that anybody has been doing, was out yet. And it was just kind of a don't get in a fight with a crackhead, keep away from meningitis was really what the thinking was at the time. It was just protect yourself with the known infectious things. Well, now this science has come out and it's terrifying with the rates of miscarriages, with the rates of birth defects, with the struggles that people have to even get pregnant. That's all on paper now, and it's a lot more terrifying. So the duality of the posts was, one, departments still don't have policies on the books, right? So they cannot tell you, hey, you have to go on unpaid leave or use up all your leave because we don't have a spot for you and we have no policy. They cannot tell you that. They cannot tell you when you have to come out unless they have something in writing saying that there's a certain physical standard that you have to meet, which most places do, and then they send you off to go do that and you fail it. That's the example. And then the post the next day about why would you want to was, hey, if your department has a way to protect you and your baby, why would you want to? I understand some people cannot lose a paycheck because they've got nothing on paper to protect them and they have to stay on the line. But if you have something in place to protect you and your baby, don't risk it. I've been there. I've sat there in fear thinking I just cost, my child his life because I went in on a hot fire and did a lot of work. I sat there for 24 hours until they finally could find a heartbeat in utter fear. And I would never wish that on anyone. So, protect yourself if you can, but if you can't, if there's nothing to protect your job, then I understand and walk that fine line, and that's a conversation that you have to have with yourself. But so that was really where those two posts came from, was it was kind of a warning to employers. You can't push people out of a paycheck, and then a warning to women of it's not worth it. If you're just out there trying to prove a point or trying to save leave, you don't need to. You're a mommy for these 9 months, and it's okay to step back and be a mommy. Your job is going to be there for the next however many years. Right now, your biggest job is that baby.
Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that personal story. That's a terrifying, thankfully valuable thing you went through. Because, I mean, how do you even mentally juggle that? Like, I'm just even thinking about being if I was at home and my wife was a firefighter and she told me that, like, yeah, I went to this abandoned structure for no good reason, and this is my situation. I'm in the hospital wondering. I'm like, oh, that would be some feelings around that from both sides, right? And that seems like one of those things where you look back and in the moment you're like, what's the worst that could happen? I'll go to a few fires or a few calls or deal with this. And but that's my job. I'm supposed to do that. And I know the risk involved in it. No big deal. And then after the fact, you're like, what was that for? Like, what was the point of doing that and undertaking that known risk even?
Right. Well, and One thing I'll add to that is I had been in that battalion for 5 or 6 years before I got pregnant with my first son. And then I had later miscarriages with my other two pregnancies. One was up into the second trimester. So everybody had known I was pregnant with those other two pregnancies. So by my fourth pregnancy, I think there was a lot of concern in the battalion of, protect Steph at all costs. So I noticed guys were going out of their way to make sure I didn't lift things and do things that I, at the time, was perfectly capable of doing. And that really made me take a step back and go, is somebody going to get hurt because of me? Is somebody going to jump in on something I can handle and then get injured themselves trying to scramble to save me in their mind? On the fire ground, we all have our individualized roles. Like, we can't be worrying about Steph and what I have to get done. And that really made me pull back and say, okay, 3 months in, I'm going to come out now that people are starting to find out I'm pregnant, so that way I can protect the integrity of the crew as well.
Do you think if you would have continued on with the fourth one and tried to stick it out again, do you think somebody would eventually had that talk with you and been like, "Hey, what are we doing here?" Or would they have continued to pick up, quote unquote, pick up the slack until you couldn't get your pants on anymore? Like, what would anybody have really broken it down for you and said, "Hey, this is the fourth time now. Can we not repeat history again, please?"
No, because it wasn't a picking up of the slack. It was a going out of the way, if that makes sense. And it was guys really trying to overprotect. And I don't think a bunch of big tough guys want to admit that they're trying to protect somebody. So I don't think anyone eventually would have. I definitely got a lot of rude comments with my first child. Your kid's gonna, why are you hurting your baby? Your kid's gonna die, or your kid's gonna be deformed, or all these things. But at no point did anyone ever have any creative, constructive feedback of, hey, let's talk this through. What is your reason for staying in the field this long with the first one and with the second one? I don't think anyone would have admitted that they were overly concerned.
Do you feel like that's an enormous missed opportunity for those conversations in the right context? That if someone has what they think of the relationship now that'd be conducive to that and the situation, is that a minefield, but more valuable than trying to go above and beyond physically for the person?
I think it's absolutely valuable. I saw a recent female who she stayed out well into 9 months. I'm sorry, stayed in well into 9 months. And it was rough on the shift because they didn't feel they could politically say anything to her. And you could tell that her energy levels and all these things, and also the area she was working in was a very rough area. So at any point, anybody on PCP could have kicked her in the stomach. So there was concern, and no one felt comfortable saying anything. So that needs to be something where a wise older female maybe gets a phone call and can more politically correctly come alongside. It would be great if the males in the crew felt comfortable enough, but if they don't, you know what? Call another woman in the department and say, listen, I've got this female, because women are also more likely to know the science. And in that case, you've got a female who can say, listen, here are all the latest studies, and guide a female to make an informed decision that's maybe a better choice for her and her child.
Isn't it weird how not strong we are as males a lot of times when it comes to like actually mattering about something. Like, you'd rather lift a 600-pound person so Stephanie doesn't have to, but you can't muster up the strength for three sentences worth of concern once in a while.
I think it's a fine line of, so my old battalion chief used to call them courageous conversations. Nobody knows how to have a courageous conversation. There's this whole barrier of nerves you've got to break through. And I think sadly, the other half of it, the other half of the people don't want to cross a political correctness barrier. I didn't approach this female either because I didn't want to cross that barrier. So I think it's kind of sad that, and this is a whole different political conversation, sad that in the fire service, we can't affect the health of someone's life by telling them true facts. That could have a huge impact on their life, right? Their health, the health of that child. We should be able to kindly, politely say something that's correct and not have to have fear of, well, this person's going to go complain about me and I'm going to get in trouble because they're a woman and I've said something to them and it looks sexist. No, I'm saying something because the science says, it's like this isn't the best life option for you right now.
Tricky, man. So I want to
Right?
talk about something else tricky. Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, I should say what's terrible is that we're so handcuffed by our own selves, you know. It just I think it just highlights the gap in communication that I wish wasn't there between the crews or the station or the leadership. Whereas you can come at this so many ways tactfully, and basically you don't have to try to, in my opinion, you don't have to come in with the opportunity with the mindset of trying to affect their decision or push them out. But just like any other problem employee thing, calling them a problem employee, investigate, fact find, and figure out why and what's going on, and get a few different sides of this thing, and then see if you can make an informed decision together with the person. You know, I feel like it carries such a preset designation of conflict that is just a bummer to me when it doesn't. I don't view it as pre-designated and necessity to be a conflict in every situation with this conversation.
Well, here's where I'm going to blow your mind. That is where a well thought out and well done reproductive health manual or pregnancy manual takes a lot of the pressure off of you because if that science is in there, you can just print this out and give it to the person and say, "Hey, I'm not sure if you've read this yet, but this is in our pregnancy policy." Might pertain to you right now and in your growing child. And that does take a lot of the stress and the pressure off worried coworkers or officers, is having all that science in there because there's a lot more science that you can put in. There's how noise and how heat and how sleep. It doesn't just have to be firefighter specific because the studies didn't really start till I want to say 2019, but there are older studies on those things that I mentioned, stress, sleep, loud noises, high heat, and how they affect the development of a baby, you can put that stuff in there as well and say, "Hey, listen, I don't know what's going on in your life, if it's financial, whatever, but here are some of the studies that are available to you. I would love it if you made the time to read them so that we can make sure that you as a firefighter are staying healthy." And that you will never get in trouble for any of that. So that's something that definitely, that's why one of the many reasons every department needs a well thought out pregnancy policy is to keep their concerned firefighters from having that struggle of, I need to say something, but I don't want to get in trouble.
So one, I think going through that whole thing, one of the most contentious positions I can imagine being in is a pregnant female saying, basically, put me through a test to show me I can't do the job and I have to not be here. Because in my mind, I'm like, you're asking me, you're calling my bluff to damage your baby then. What you're doing is you're telling me to put you in positions that you may fail in physically, which could cause severe harm to the child. How do you navigate that? Like, can you avoid that? Because I don't want to put a pregnant female through a fitness evaluation that I know she's likely not going to pass and cause undue stress to her in general, right? Have you seen that come
So
to a head and blow up?
I've seen it happen once, but the good news is thanks to federal law, we no longer have to. This, what was it, June 29th? I want to say either June 29th or May 29th, the Pregnancy Workers Fairness Act came into play. And basically that means every department now has to have modified duty. It says that women are now allowed to ask for reasonable accommodations. So even if you don't have a modified duty, congratulations, you now do. Because now I can say, I am 3 months pregnant. I don't feel safe or comfortable staying on the line anymore. I would like the reasonable accommodation of being behind a desk.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, or teaching up at the academy or whatever. So we've really put women in a position of no longer having to worry about that paycheck, which I think at the end of the day is really why most women have done that. I mean, I was very young and dumb in my early 20s, but I think most other women now, especially after COVID, I think COVID has made a lot of women just more aware of, guess what? Infectious diseases can pop out from anywhere, brand new ones that, you know, we didn't think of before. But now that hopefully is gone. Now any woman feels safe to say, okay, my paycheck is safe. I can come out of the field.
And that's, but is that under,
go ahead. Sorry.
That was under the ADA, right? American Disability Act. Did that fall under that more or less? Cause it has a lot of the same terminology in it.
It does, because originally women were using in certain situations, ADA, but ADA, you had to prove that you had a disability from pregnancy. Now you don't. You have to prove that you're pregnant, essentially, which isn't hard to do. And it also covers, so before you become pregnant, so women struggling with fertility issues, we've proven that both male and female firefighters struggle with fertility. So let's say I need a reasonable accommodation to get pregnant. So maybe I need to come off the line for a while because I'm going through in vitro. If I miss 24 hours of sleep while I'm getting in vitro, I've never gone through in vitro, but I would imagine that that would flush 20 grand down the toilet, because your hormones, if you miss 24 hours of sleep, have completely changed their profile and they are not friendly to getting pregnant. So now that puts departments in a position of having to accommodate that, as well as the postpartum period. So it covers the whole period for females when it comes to fertility.
What kind of postpartum and return to work stuff are you seeing now? Is it, what's the average postpartum light duty or temporary restricted duty term that you're seeing?
I think women are still doing between 3 to 6 months. What I have seen is a lot more females after COVID wanting to stay out longer to breastfeed, because there was a study that came out, Jeff Burgess, University of Arizona, that showed how many carcinogens are in breast milk after a fire. And the number was staggering. And I think that opened a lot of women's eyes to just the dangers of, I know when I had both of my boys, none of the science was out. And the thought was kind of, okay, if you're pumping and breastfeeding and you run a fire, treat it like an alcoholic drink, you know, throw the milk away for a day, and then you can go back to feeding your baby. Well, now the study showed that there was a high level of toxins and carcinogens in your breast milk 3 days after a fire. So I think a lot more females are wanting to stay on light duty longer. It'll be very interesting to see how this new law is interpreted when it comes to that and a reasonable accommodation. Because once again, science. I mean, how are we gonna argue with that?
So I guess that would be the question, right? Is like beforehand, proving that you're pregnant is clearly defined. Afterwards, when does it become a preference that you're nursing versus a necessity or something you need to make a reasonable accommodation for, right? So I see that being, as you're talking, I'm kind of thinking in my head, that would be a gray area where it's like, at some point there might be have to be a standard set of, based on data of nursing and biological growth, maybe after a certain point, nursing isn't so essential anymore. And that will be the cutoff where if you're now you're like 2.5 years in, I just love nursing, so I'm just going to stay on restricted duty, right?
Right. And I think that's where the women in departments need to have an old school conversation with each other and say, all right, what's the median number that we can come up with? Because shift schedule does destroy your milk supply as well. So going back on shift period makes it very, very hard to be a breastfeeding mom. So that's a conversation that if there's a women's association, more a small enough department that, there's only five women and they can all have that conversation, you decide, hey, we want to put this forth in the breastfeeding policy. We think this is a fair number. I'm not going to throw out what I think is the fair number because, I mean, I breastfed not as long as I've seen a lot of other women want to, so that would be unfair to the
Yeah,
female race.
sure.
But
Well,
I,
it's also preference at a certain point too, right? Like
right, at a
we had
certain point.
Nathan had a tongue tie, and Katie wanted a nurse, but it was just such a pain that pumping was just way easier. And then it became, I was trapped and I had to feed Nathan overnight because I had the ability to then. So I was like, ah, maybe
Yeah.
we can try nursing again, right? But yeah, for a lot of people, they're like, I'm not even worrying about that. I'm just going to go formula. And maybe that, I mean, that is a case by case basis, but that per I don't want to, how do you make that person not undercut the other ones that do want to do it then, right? Like where I see that's all the stuff that just has to be figured out. And as much as you try to standardize it, it's still going to be case by case and pregnancy by pregnancy, ultimately.
I think it really is. I think it sounds great to be able to say, hey, come up with a number to put in a breastfeeding policy, but I think then there's always going to be somebody who challenges it,
Yeah.
which is understandable. Feeding and watching your child grow is a very, very personal thing. And I mean, I'll say this, the first time my kid threw up formula, I wondered if I made the right decision. That stuff
Yeah.
smells awful. So it made me wonder what's happening to my poor child's insides right now.
Yeah.
It's a very personal and intimate decision. So that's going to be the one of the ones that is being fought out for years to come, I think. There's no going to be no fast and easy answer for that one.
So what kind of attitude, I guess you can never answer this correctly, so I'm gonna, it'll be a bad question, I think.
Joy.
I just scrapped it in my head anyway, so I'm starting over. What kind of attitude do you think is the most productive for the females in the department that are like, we got to forge this new path. I want to have a family. There's nothing in writing right now. There's a tendency to storm ahead and start doing what you want and ask for forgiveness later, or is a more open communication, trying to establish a plan, softer general approach. Maybe you're not going to get a quarter of what you want, but the next six pregnancies after you will keep building on it. And then 10 years from now, maybe there's something good there. Like, what have you seen the most success with? A soft play or the law's on my side? We're going to get this thing no matter what you want to do.
So I started kicking and screaming about our manual in 2011 with my first child. And I thought it was a horrible thing. And I will say this, it's better than what many places have, even in its state back then. And I didn't get permission to form a group and start updating it until 2019. So the kicking and screaming route, it can take longer than you think it can. I would always say, listen, walk in and say, hi, me and my significant other would like to start a family, and how can we make sure that I can safely do that? And if they say, we don't have to do that, then you know what? Kick and scream. But I would always try to lay the groundwork first, because if you lay the groundwork first, you get to write it. And you might get to put more in there than you think. And then, if they stand in your way, by all means, storm the castle. But storming the castle can actually take longer than you would think it would.
Yeah. So what are some hot things now? You got I know you're always up on discussing infertility concerns, pregnancy concerns. What's one thing now that's really kind of lighting you up or is coming across your desk more frequently that you want to hit on real quick?
The thing that always is at the top of my list actually is we don't discuss pregnancy injury and how to rehab moms. After my first or second child, I've always stayed at busy houses, ADHD. I can't be at a slow house. I will lose my mind or redecorate, and I don't even like to redecorate. So we're gonna stick with busy houses. And I remember at a certain point, I looked around and I saw moms that I knew were more aggressive people that like to be busy going to quieter houses. And I started asking them and talking to them, and they felt that physically, despite working out just as hard, their bodies weren't the same. And after my second pregnancy, I realized what they meant. And after talking to my doctor, I found out my abs were ripped wide open. You could have stuck, two fists or a softball through the hole in my abs. I had ripped up all kinds of other muscles as well, and I had to go see a physical therapist. And thank God we went through that process because my body was back to normal. But it is considered in America okay for women to have those injuries because when they send women back to work, they're assuming they're going to be behind a desk. They're not checking you as if you're an athlete. If you were an athlete, you would be checked for those injuries if you were on the US Olympic team. But as a firefighter, you're not. So the hot topic for me will always be making sure you have some sort of document in your pregnancy policy or making sure your women are educated on when you walk in at your 6-week checkup, you tell them, check my abs. Are my abs still together or do I need to go do rehab? Because if you have some sort of pelvic muscle instability, which affects your back, or if you have torn abs, which affects everything, it is the same exercise and it is just a simple breathing technique. And that is it. And you can have it fixed within 6 weeks if you don't need surgery. But it takes out so many of our female firefighters. I think they said, and I haven't taught on it in a little while, so I'm just pulling this number out, but I believe it's still 63% of women have it, and that's just diagnosed. Most women aren't checked for it. And then after a year, like 30 or 40% still have it because American women aren't taught. If you look at other cultures, they bind women, they bind their abs after they have the baby, right? And that helps. We don't do that here. So that will always be my soapbox is make sure your female firefighters know to be checked so they can still have these constructive long careers where they are safe and then their crews are safe because they're not walking around with an injury and they're not going to drop a ladder on their head or somebody else's because their core completely gives way.
So would you eventually, or is that covered by the department for that rehab that might happen, or is that on the individual then to figure that out and then go to a therapist to get that work done?
So most people don't even need to go to a physical therapist. When I say it's just a simple breathing, you've heard of stomach vacuums. That's all it is. If you need rehab, you probably need surgery. So that is on the individual with their insurance and all that. That's not a department thing. But if you have a department that has any kind of physical program, you have a trainer or anything like that, make sure your trainer knows what that is. Make sure your trainer knows how to do core rehab exercises with females. Because guess what, guys, weightlifters, they get that injury too. So make sure they know how to do it regardless.
Yeah,
Females and males
that's
get
an
it.
interesting one. I think I would have to read up on it if so like if Megan comes back and she's like, "Hey, I need you to train me for this." I'd be like, "I got to do some reading on this one just to make sure we're doing this right, you know." But that's good to remind everybody. It's that simple. I would have thought it would take more to repair the diastasis like that. But that's good. So how have you started working that into departments then? Is that something that's been actively put in?
That is something that I tell everybody to put in their manual. And when I teach, I do a small section on that. And I've been lucky that both times I've taught it at ALTS, I've had PT directors and the peer fitness guys say, well, yeah, we do the peer fitness for our department. We've never heard of this. So it's kind of fun to watch that light bulb turn on, and hopefully we can have more females have a longer career because of it.
That's very cool. So do you think it comes down to a lot of mentality of the department if they just want to resolve the problem as fast as possible and get this person back to duty, or if they want to invest in their people and make sure they have a long career? That seems like the two competing philosophies out there, right? Like, come on, get them through. If it was a knee injury, get them through surgery, keep checking up on them, get them through rehab. We're paying overtime while you're not here, so get back to work kind of thing. Or I understand this is going to take 3 extra months. Why don't you make sure you come back and don't have to go off again in 6 months for the same injury? We're going to invest on the front end kind of thing.
I think 99% of the departments I've seen are absolutely miserable, and they fail consistently at making sure their firefighters, male or female, recover appropriately, right? It's a body in the field. It doesn't matter if it's after a baby or after a knee surgery. I think there are boxes that they just want to check and get somebody back out there. And it's a rushed process, and it doesn't matter what kind of injury it is. Pregnancy itself is not an injury. Don't put it in that category. However, it can result in injuries. So make sure that those female athletes aren't injured. Make sure that the guy who just had knee surgery actually has a stable knee. Make sure your firefighters are on solid physical ground before we put them back in the field. And I think, sadly, because it is a hot button topic, I think you can, and what men forget is I think you can get more wins for your male firefighters by pushing female health. And I think that hasn't clicked for a lot of guys. But gents, if you stand behind your female firefighters and getting them good policies, then you can point to that, since that is a hot button item, and get better policies for yourselves, for both genders across the department. Standing behind your female firefighters is the right thing to do anyway, but if you're not interested in it, there are selfish gains in it for
sure.
You.
Whatever do the incentive has reason. To be, yeah. Right? So why shouldn't you put pregnancy in the category of injury? Because I remember talking to Megan about this. That might be the best and the most relatable way to get put on light duty or put on TRD. If you say, hey, let's treat this like an injury and I can still be here running the desk, but I won't be using my own thing. Classified as whatever you want. Just keep me paid and keep me coming to work, but not on the front line, right? Or is that a completely different topic of injury? What are you thinking when you say don't put it in the same category?
So for us, we have a timer. If we're injured, we're put on a timer that we have to recover within 11 months. So I say it because and then we get a letter stating we're going to be terminated.
Okay.
So right now in our department, women are subjected to that. So let's say,
holy cow,
I have preemies, or I had to be on bed rest, so I came out at day one, you know, I struggled with infertility, whatever. I stayed out 9, 10 months of pregnancy. Well, I had a C-section. Well, they won't even let you drive until 6 weeks after a C-section. So I'm right up against that mark to get fired. So if you put yourself in an injury category, you are more subject to termination versus I also think it's a horrible mentality to have. Hi, I'm a woman. I can make babies. You can't make babies. I can make babies. This is a normal life thing. If you would like the planet to go on, you're going to let me go have a baby. It's a normal thing. It's not an unfortunate thing that happened to me, like spraining my ankle.
Right.
It's just a normal life event.
Yeah. I understand that it does stunt the progression of and the evolution of this thing and becoming just another thing. If you have to classify it as something it's not to make it work.
Well, and if we put it in the injury category, okay, what is breastfeeding in then? Or what if I wanted to stay off longer, let's say I had a preemie and I want to stay off longer to ensure I have that safe milk supply for the baby, because that is absolutely imperative for a preemie child. Well, if I've put it in the injury leave category, then I've really gotten a wiggle room with that.
So all things to be determined, or you're working on, right?
The new PWFA really does help women out a lot, because we are now federal law. and we no longer have to prove disability. We just have to prove this is a necessary accommodation. So we just talked about preemie. I can prove this is a necessary accommodation, or I had my abs cut open because I needed a C-section.
Yeah.
This is a necessary accommodation.
Yeah.
I don't have to prove that I am disabled from this event. I just have to prove, in order to become a healthy functioning firefighter again, I need a little bit more help, and here's the help I need.
I think the main word in there that a lot of guys who are resistant to it will fall back on is the reasonable, right? Reasonable accommodation. I'm sure there's still a mentality out there of like, oh, she's going to try to get away with something here and like make us bend over backwards to accommodate her. And I think they're going to, that reasonable thing, they're going to be like, it's got to be reasonable though. Don't say anything that's not reasonable. And it's, but that's up to, I would say, women in general to define what's reasonable, because it's a very difficult thing for a guy to be like, that's unreasonable to have physical therapy for your abs being torn in half. Big deal.
One of the best things I heard recently was I had a male officer in the department next to mine, so upset. He said, yeah, this woman, she doesn't want to come back to work. She's on her third pregnancy. She keeps having kids every 2 years. And I said, well, that's how most people do it. They want their kids within a certain age range of each other, so that way the kids can be friends and, you know, you're not storing clothes for a long time. You can pass the clothes. It's just, that is normal, my man.
Yeah.
That's not trying to stay out of the field. That's called being a mom.
Man, there's and easier just, ways to stay out of the field.
What, kids every right. 2 years. But watching the light bulb turn on, this guy only has one kid, watching the light bulb turn on, and you could tell he was thinking about the people he knows that aren't firefighters and how their kids were staged. And he was like, oh, yeah, you're right. A lot of people do that. And it made me laugh and want to smack him across the face all at once.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, we do still have this stigma in a lot of places of pregnant moms. There's always an assumption that she just doesn't want to do the work. Someone somewhere will have that assumption. Gentlemen, I have been a firefighter for 20 years. I will tell you, being a stay-at-home mom is my greatest fear and the most work I will ever do. I lied with my second child. I was 5 weeks postpartum when I came back. And I came back at 6 weeks with my first child. And I lied and I told him I was 6 weeks with my second. Being a mother is much harder than being a firefighter. Trust me, we're not avoiding the field. Trust me on that one.
Oh, I found the soundbite for this episode. Congratulations.
Thank
you have a lot
you.
More to talk about on the podcast now. Oh,
there
my
you go.
Goodness. This is awesome, man. Stephanie, thank you so much. Tell everybody where they can find you, where they can look you up, how to get in contact with you, all that stuff.
You can find the Beltane Guild on Instagram and also on the web. It is Beltane. We have a wonderful researcher named Brittany Hollerback, who is in charge of our research policy. I do our written policy. And then the woman who started the entire organization, her name is Maya Earle. She is fantastic with the fundraising for it. And we do give away small grants for firefighters struggling with fertility. So find us on Instagram or the World Wide Web. You can find me as a podcaster on 5 After Midnight on Instagram or anywhere that you listen to fire engineering podcasts.
Awesome. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Chris.
I'm hoping it will cause some issues for you and more conversations for you. And so we can have you back on here and you can recap that. And this is awesome.
I don't need help causing issues for myself. We're good there.
You get sent in to cause issues, try to get away with stuff. I get it. Yeah, right on. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you again.
Thank you for facilitating this conversation.